I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
I remember the scene pretty well. We had about 10 people sitting around a large round table. We were in Beijing, China. It was about 10 or 15 years ago. I couldn't speak the language, nor could they do very well speak English. We had people who were translating the different languages so we could have a conversation. We were just about ready to start a long week of training on leadership development and business acumen. So I opened up the question about what sort of things did these people find most interesting? What were they most proud of when it came to their city? And what were they most embarrassed about when they came to their city? And what I found in their answers was so many different things that I would say the same thing about my city, about where I live in the United States. And then we started talking about other things like family and leadership and quality of life and growing old. And again, I was reminded, although I couldn't speak the language, they were halfway around the globe from where I lived and grew up. The similarities were just astounding. And that's one of the things why I love travel so much, is that you see yourself in very different people and vice versa. So what does this have to do with my next guest on the Business of Intuition? This guy is actually a CEO of a company called Professional Hair Labs. And even though at first glance, you would say, wait a minute, this guy is into manufacturing all sorts of things in the beauty industry and chemicals and so forth. What does this have to do with leadership and developing cultures, let alone even intuition? Well, just like my experience with my Chinese friends, I got to know Ryan Margolin, the CEO, quickly, easily, and effectively, and found him to be just a very insightful leader who has messages that are universal, that has a perspective about how to build a culture that can survive COVID and can also scale from three people to now over 23, 24. And he has five different fundamental beliefs that he has learned the hard way about how to live his life and how to lead his culture and how to lead his team. And so that's one of the main things that I came out of this conversation with Ryan, was this wonderful perspective that was how he does what he does, not so much what he does. And so I am delighted to announce our next guest on the Business of Intuition, Ryan Margolin. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for being a guest on the Business of Intuition. I know it's bedtime there in Ireland. I'm just like getting going on my second wind, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but you got to be thinking about hitting the sheets here pretty soon, my friend.
I mean, absolutely.
12 midnight, right? That's great. I appreciate you being courageous enough and to hit back the other pot of coffee to stay this long.
Yeah, look, I wish I would say I had a pot of coffee, but if I did, I probably wouldn't sleep at all. So
I hear you.
But I appreciate you for having me, Dean.
You bet. So I want to get into this a little bit, but just could you tell our listeners a little bit about you and what your company is all about? You will be much better at doing that than I. Then let's dive into some of the things having to do with how you scaled your company.
Sure. So our company is Professional Hair Labs. So we're a manufacturer of cosmetic bonding adhesives, shampoos, scalp treatments, and other cosmetics for not only the hair replacement industry, but for the beauty and hair industry in general. So I myself am the CEO. My brother Daryl is vice president, and my brother David is the chief operating officer. We have two locations. One in Europe, which is located in Ireland, and we have a distribution facility in Florida where we serve the Canadian market and the US market, and Ireland is catered towards the rest of the world. We have a team of 24 plus people, And, you know, we operate roughly split about half and half between both operations. And we're currently looking at expanding our operations from, say, we have 10,000 square feet in Ireland to 50,000 over the next 6 months. And then in the US, we have 17,500. And we're doubling that, hopefully, again, by the end of the year. We're in the process of building. So,
congratulations on your success. I mean, curious about, let's start off this conversation around the family business. I mean, you've got yourself, your brothers, as you said at one point, your father was involved. How did you guys figure out the way to bring on people, the decision-making process, the whole succession planning? Sometimes family business owners can struggle with that. Who's doing what? Who's got ultimate decision-making process? We have family ties, but now we have business laying over that. That can create some friction. How did you guys work through that?
Yeah, it was a big learning curve for us. So at the very beginning, you know, when the three, myself and my two brothers were involved in the business, the one thing we've always had going for us is that, you know, we focus very heavily on improving our communication skills. Communication is a huge part of this. Ultimately, as the company started to grow, we realized that, look, that, you know, we can have decisions across the board that are made, but ultimately there has to be someone driving the ship. So we had very honest conversations with each other about where we're at, what our strong points are, what our weak points are, and where we think we would fit best into the company to help it grow. Because ultimately, there's no time for ego in any of that. If you want a successful company, you have to be willing to, you know, drop the veil and look at yourself in the mirror and figure that stuff out. You know, that those conversations are difficult enough to have with each other, but, you know, it's even harder to have them with yourself, because you have to accept certain things that you might not be as good at as somebody else. So that was a huge part in the learning curve. When we figured that structure, things went from strength to strength, because we were able to then essentially get out of each other's way and actually do what we do best in our individual lanes and, you know, with our responsibilities and whatnot. So it was a really interesting time. The first, I'd say from about 2012, from about 2015. And then from that point on, we kind of settled into everything and we started to realize, look, the company has global potential. And in order to effectively grow and scale a company, you have to be smart with how you structure it. We had many moving parts. We had, you know, two operating companies. We had property companies that were holding the assets for the buildings that we operated in. Mm. And naturally, my brothers and I are dual citizens. So we have tax responsibilities that needed to be looked at. So we hired one of the best tax consultants and attorney firms in the U.S., and we did the same here on the European side and put a structure together that would allow us to make sure we're running as efficiently as possible. And we can invest essentially all of our profits back into the company to make sure it continues to move forward.
Got it. So if we go back to the beginning that you were describing, the communication needs for your family to decide the structure and figure out exactly who's going to do what, decision-making and so forth. I was remember a conversation I had with a CEO of another company, family-owned, and he was bringing his kids on board. And he said, you know, I really think that that's the best structure to have your family involved. And I said, well, why is that? He says, because you already have that trust. You already have that relationship. The problem that he kind of ran into was that those family members became sort of sacred cows. They were looked upon and treated differently than everybody else. Certain decisions, certain preferences, and even just the water cooler conversation. Well, you know, that's a family member, you know. How would you describe the culture in your company relative to non-family and family, and how they either see themselves as being different or the same?
Yeah, so we would see ourselves as being the same. There's not a single job that's done inside of this company right now that either myself or my two brothers haven't done to start it off, or that we haven't trained somebody to do, you know, even recently. So we view our team as that, a team. We're there to do a job, and we know exactly what we have to do. We have very clear outcomes in the company, And we trust that the individuals in those positions are there every day to do it. And for the most part, they do. I think when they realize, when they understand the purpose of what we do, like, for example, with some of our products, they're cosmetic products, but they're for a very specific purpose. And when they realize the impact that they have on people's lives, it really makes them understand that what they do on a daily basis affects everything. Everything from the moment the product gets put into a bottle to the packaging to the shipping and everything, it matters by the time the customer gets that. And I think that understanding has helped not only the company as a whole perform better, but I think it's also shaped the way that the team views the executives, such as myself and my two brothers. It's very rare that we would run into a challenge with somebody on the team. And if there is, there's an open line of communication to solve it, because we don't want, as you said, those water cooler conversations. We don't want those conversations to be spreading across the company. It's like, if there's an issue, we communicate it and we solve it. So we wouldn't view, to answer your question quite simply, we wouldn't view ourselves any differently than the rest of the team, because we would still roll up our sleeves and do what had to be done.
So that's great. I like what you just said about getting into the trenches with them, and everybody understands that you understand every part of the business because you've done it. And that obviously provides you tremendous credibility with the employees. I guess to dig a little bit further into this, would you hold a family member accountable to the same standards you would hold a non-family member? Meaning, if somebody on your family was not performing appropriately, they would be, I don't know, held accountable in the same way that a non-family member was. And has that happened yet? Have you run into that yet? And tell us about how you did it.
Yeah. So I think one thing that has to be very clear when you're operating in any type of business, but more importantly, a familial business, naturally there has to be an operating agreement in place. There has to be, clear-cut boundaries and rules for performance, for everything, for, buyouts, whatever it may be, simply to hold each other accountable. In terms of performance, we hold each other accountable every day. You know, there's times where somebody might drop the ball. One of us might drop the ball, and it's like, listen, I really need that. And we are held accountable. We have board meetings every week where we discuss challenges, we discuss the positives, we discuss the numbers, we discuss where we're at in terms of our quarterly planning and what those tasks involved and what percentage of those is done. So we are always holding each other accountable, because at the end of the day, I don't really think there's truly anyone that can run on their own all the time without having some sort of accountability. There has to be some set of boundaries that people have to operate in, because they know that if they get a bit too complacent, or their tasks don't get completed in the time they needed to be completed, it puts everyone back. So we would hold each other accountable to a high standard.
So right now it's you and your two brothers.
Correct.
Is that, in a sense, the ELT, the management team, or are there others at that same level of voting authority that the two or three of you have?
No. The level of voting authority would be myself and my two brothers. We do have a board with two other members as well, so that their input and their feedback is greatly appreciated. But at the end of the day, when it comes to the hardline decisions, that falls on our laps.
Would you? I'm not suggesting that this is the right model. I'm just sort of curious about it. I've worked with another large $9 billion construction company that has a similar type of structure, where it's primarily family and a few other quote unquote owners who, in a sense, they're the ones who make the final decisions on most things. I wonder if, as you guys grow, and I'm assuming that you intend to, your little introduction indicated that there was certainly that in the pipeline. Would you ever envision a situation where the management team would include non-family members? Or do you always think that no matter what, based on our charter, based on our tax structure, all the things that you just described, in the as large as we ever get, we will always have the three of us, and maybe your father if he's involved still, to be the final say in all decisions, or in very important decisions?
Yeah, well, right now, the best answer I can give to that is, moving forward, we would aim to keep it as the three of us.
Okay, absolutely. Okay.
Now, we do align very well with, a lot of consultants that we work with, in terms of, if there's decisions that have to be made, And, you know, look, there's sometimes where you're a little bit out of your comfort zone. You know, that's all part of the learning curve. We would have people there to lean on, but ultimately we built it this far as, you know, as a collective, and we would like to keep it that way. Now, you could ask me that in 5 years' time and I might have a different
Yeah,
but for now, that's my position on it.
So you're no longer a small startup, hypothetically, hyperbole, working out of a garage. You know, you've got a real company going, right? You got two different locations, maybe a third, two different countries and structures. You know, you're getting into the big time. How are you developing and being intentional about your culture so that as you get further and further afield from each other, it's not just the two brothers and dad sitting around a table. We now have 20, 30 people, maybe more at some point. What are your plans about how do you build the culture to scale with the size of the business?
Yeah, and I think that's quite important. Right now, the learning curve we're on with this whole process and making sure we retain the culture as we grow is we look at hiring the right people. Like right now, anyone who's in a management role or an operational role, we would have worked very heavily for 3 years plus to ensure that we instill in them exactly what we expect from every individual inside of the company. And even when it comes time to, you know, when it comes time to hand directives down that need to be followed, we make sure that they're delivered in a way that aligns with, you know, how we would speak to everyone. I would sit in the lunchroom with everyone and have lunch on a daily basis. You know, we like to keep everything very close, but at the same time, we're also aware that as the company grows, naturally that's going to change. We need to, you know, right now our main concern is having the right people on the team that can really drive the culture that we want for the company with us and make sure that they're doing it correctly.
So I think you're absolutely right. It speaks to some of the things that you read from, you know, Jim Collins, Good to Great, those sort of experts in the field, that getting the right people on the bus, so to speak, is absolutely, you know, bar none, especially in this great resignation environment that we're in. You know, it is obviously the top thing that you need to focus on. I guess if you haven't, I mean, this is a couple of thoughts that maybe I'll throw your way is, you know, to think about what is the culture you will need when you're 50?
Yeah.
And start defining and putting words to that and getting people to align to that before you actually need it, because before you know it, you will have 50.
Yeah, that's it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm a good 10 years off it. But, you know, the thing that, you know, that this is the thing, putting pen to paper and writing something down in that manner. One of the things that I find is changing a lot at the moment is individuals' mindsets and their the way that they view and perceive not only the job that they do, but, you know, the responsibilities that they carry. And it's changing very fast. You know, I only sat back and I thought about this the other day, and I was thinking to myself, the same thing that you just said is like, what is the environment that, you know, the environment we're going to be working and looking like in, you know, 10, 20, 30 years time? What are the, you know, the people who are working with the company going to expect? How are they going to handle themselves? And I find that a bit of a challenge to wrap my head around, you know? So I try to be as predictive as you want, as you want, but realistically, you know, when that time comes, it could and likely will look completely different than to what you're planning for. You know, that's what I found out is,
yeah,
you can plan all you want, but, you know, the environments, they just take their own shapes. And as much as you guide that and you instill something in the company, times change. And sometimes they change without, you know, your influence.
Nobody predicted COVID, for example, right?
Yes.
And exactly. It completely was the major disruption in most of our lifetimes. If we could think back the arc of living 80, 90, 100 years.
Of course.
You know, it'll be one of those major milestone events that changed a lot of things. Absolutely right. And I agree with you 100%. I think that word that I come to mind when you talk is agile. You know, you've got to be, you think about project management, you've got waterfall versus, you know, agile project management. But that's also true in terms of culture development. I think you can define what you want in the future and knowing that you're going to have to pivot.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is it. And that was I think, you know, even around COVID, that was a huge challenge for us because you really saw what everyone was made of. So in the US, we were okay because, you know, it was left in a lot of places quite flexible to whether you were going to close your business or not. Some places didn't have a choice, but in
you
Ireland,
were in Florida too. Florida was a different state than say California or
exactly.
or Toronto, exactly. Canada. You know, these are very, very, very different approaches to how they dealt with that pandemic.
Absolutely. And then in Ireland, we were deemed a non-essential service. So we were facing shutting our doors for 3 months. So the first thing the team did was be huddled in a room and be like, okay, look, here's the story. We've got 24 hours to figure this out. And what happened was we ended up pivoting into manufacturing hand sanitizer. We never had a formula in our life. And the guys put together a formula. We were, because we had a huge range of ingredients, we were able to formulate within 24 hours, use our network to build some networks, and we kept the doors open. Everyone kept the job. And it was a saving grace because at the end of the day, it was a team effort that kept that going. And that's the time where you really saw where people what people were made of. And I think on the flip side to that, COVID has also changed the way majority of people think now. You know, some people have realized that, you know, life isn't all about go, go, go. And it's forced a lot of people to take their foot off the pedal and reflect and see what's really, truly important to them. And, you know, then there was others who it motivated them even further to drive harder because they were faced with the challenge of having, you know, everything that they worked for and they built being destroyed. So it's, you know, it was a really, it was really polarized, you know, for a lot of people. Mm. And I, you know, coming out of this side of it now, when you look at, you know, even individuals who are looking for work or looking for jobs, it's just a different way of life now. And, you know, look, we have to adapt to that.
So define the difference between the average employee that you are looking for now versus what you were looking for pre-pandemic. What's the mindset difference?
I think it's hunger. It's the hunger to realize that there's opportunities there. And it's, you know, I would sooner, for me personally, and I, you know, I conducted quite a lot of interviews around, you know, director level roles that we were hiring for. And I would sooner look at someone with less experience who's hungry, because you know what, they're, you can teach them, you can train them, they can adapt to the way that you do things, and they're open-minded. And I think that is the difference. It really comes down to mindset. It's the difference the mindset is the difference between, you know, are you just going to stay in the same place? Or are you really going to truly achieve what you know you can and realize your full potential? What I found through COVID is that it really lit a fire under our team to realize, look, I've got the thought process and I've got the mindset to get stuck in here and actually do something, you know, valuable to not only the company, but for myself to show what I'm capable of. And that is really the strength of the team that we are looking at building. We have a good management team. We have a really good management team. And we focus everything that we have into the internal training of everyone. And it's trained down very well. If we somehow manage to keep that together, I think we're going to be in a good place. But time will tell.
I love what you said about the mindset. So it sounds like I could paraphrase, and you didn't say this, but I'm wondering if you're saying is that you're now focused on finding hungry, metaphorically speaking, when it comes to who you're looking for. You would rather train somebody in a position that they don't necessarily have the perfect skills at, but that would be trumped by that hunger that you just described. And I've been talking to my team about this too, and these things don't last forever, but I've been telling my clients this too. You're going to need to hire people that 2 years ago you would have passed on.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because now, I mean, well, you may be coming out of the great resignation, but now we have a need for employees far greater than we ever have. We have open recs. We have, you know, positions all over the place. You get into healthcare, it's even worse. And so therefore, but you have the right mindset, you can train the rest. And then we're going as a company going like, well, that's good for us because we're into training and development. We're a consulting firm. This is going to be a big opportunity for us. So I think that you're right. It's that hunger that is going to be the differentiator. Do you see, I read something in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was just today. And by the way, you know, when we did this interview, for those who are listening, I think it was second or third day in August of 2022. So it's things that will change so quickly, but some CEOs, because they're beginning to smell recession, are becoming more hardcore in being less soft and inclusive and getting back to those old behaviors where they kind of are thinking that the power shift is going to go away from employee back to employer. What do you think?
I think it's a bit of fear, if I'm to be honest. I think it's a bit of fear. I'm a firm believer. Look, I think, so my thoughts on the whole employment thing is that, you know, you're right. Everyone is looking at people, you know, who now are CVs or resumes they would have passed on 2 years ago. But I think there's a lesson to be learned in that. And I think if, you know, executive levels or CEOs or whoever, business owners are looking at the potential recession on the horizon, there's no need to take the hardline approach. You know, we found there's just as much progress and momentum to be gained by continuing to allow, you know, the parallel movement of employees and employer. You know, it's one and the same. At the end of the day, you're just the person who's taking the risk. You know, whether it's, you know, financing equipment or whether it's, you know, investing in the company. Look, at the end of the day, employees can walk away from it. They're free of all ties, but you're running in parallel. That's how you're building this company. At the end of the day, they're your guidance, but they're following the goals that you're setting for them, or that, you know, management is setting for them. So I don't agree with that approach. I do see it happening as well, by the way. I see a lot of, you know, a lot of owners and a lot of, you know, different CEOs and even management, they're starting to see a reset. There's a term, but again, we don't know what it is. I mean, look, let's look at this. Technically, a recession is, you know, negative growth for 2 months. You know, we're well.
We supposedly have already had.
Yeah, we're well past
according, that. According so, to GDP. Yeah, we've already supposedly. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think stay in your lane and focus on what you're doing. And you know, look, I mean, even if there was a recession, I mean, there's still not a shortage of money around right now. You know, I know inflation has been putting a strain on things, but at the end of the day, there's no shortage of money, and the world is a big place, and there's still so much opportunity. And I think, you know, one of the key things that we instill with anyone who joins our team is that as the company grows, they grow. I mean, we have, like, for example, we have a, you know, a warehouse operative who started with us at the very beginning. I think he was like team member number 5, and he's now training to be a chemist, you know? So like, this is the culture that we've developed. And, you know, I don't believe in taking the hardline approach, you know, just because people feel there's a shift in, you know, in the market. You know, it's just, it doesn't fit well with me. It's not the way I
am. It's so opportunistic too. So counter to people's core values, I think, is just to simply say, now is our time to pounce, you know, when before we had to. It's like, oh, you're missing the larger point. I've always think about with some teams and leaders is think much longer than the short term of the quarter by quarter, year by year. But, you know, even think as crazy as it sounds, like, what are you trying to do in 100 years?
Exactly. Now,
we're not going to be around to see it, but what's that 100-year vision going to look like? What are you trying to accomplish? Because when you start going out that far in your thinking, you start to open up your mind, going back to your words too, Ryan, around mindset, around possibilities, maybe even some threats, changes in the economy, different things that could happen, but start thinking about some of that. But then more importantly, what would that kind of a culture be like if we knew that we were taking a stand that we're going to be here for 100 years more?
Yeah.
Now, what does that say to your stakeholders, your employees, your boards of directors, your all the people you engage with, your community, your customers?
Yeah, like, your community, especially, because on a local level, that's the stuff that matters. Because if you're, you know, as you grow and become a larger employer in a local area, you become the go-to company because everyone is like, look, I've been here for X amount of years and, you know, this is the way I've been treated. And, you know, look, that's important. You know, it's vitally important. Like, we're people, we're humans. You know, look, we're one and the same. It's just the difference is about what you do and what you don't do. You know,
I like you, Ryan. I wish we could go out and have a pint somewhere.
Yeah. Well, look, if you're in the area,
in Ireland, I'll come and see you. Yeah. It's absolutely funny how I love this podcast because I've just created so many friendships over the years. It's been so much fun. I've gathered in this short time together that this business for you is not just the products that you're creating and the money you're generating, but the how you do it is almost as important as what it is you're creating. It's this culture, it's the people, it's the leadership, it's you know, getting the right people on the bus. So I guess my on that vein, when it comes to the things that you've learned, what is the message that you want people to hear from you about what you've done? If you had a TED Talk that somebody said, hey, Ryan, guess what? We want you to do a TED Talk. And you've got 35 minutes to tell us your point of view about culture and leadership and, you know, the human side of business. Is there something that comes to mind that you would say, yes, I feel passionate about X? What is X for you?
I think for me, there was five key fundamentals that really, I think, had the biggest impact on me developing as a person. And, you know, look, I think ultimately these five things helped me become a better person. They helped me make better decisions, but they helped me perform at a much higher level and be more, make more of a contribution to those around me. And those key points are, you know, they're really simple in nature. It's, you know, look, the first one is that you have to just believe in yourself, because you're going to have to work a lot of long nights with no applause, no attention, no congratulations. You know, even when times get tough, you have to be your own motivator. So that's my big learning curves. One of the other things that really helped me was to learn how to manage my focus, not just my time, you know, because when you're managing time, time is a period. It's a period of time where you're wondering, okay, how many tasks can I get done? But if you switch your view on that to say, okay, well, look, if you learn to manage your focus, the time becomes irrelevant, because everything just goes out and time just does not exist. So you can solely focus in. I think that was it. That was a huge attribute, which helped me figure that out. You know, look, I could talk all day on those key things, but if you were asking me about a TED Talk, I think it would just be around, you know, fundamentals of the simple things you can do that can make the most impact. Because
all right, so you got to bring me home, buddy, because you wet my whistle and I got to get to the other three. So you've got the two: believe in yourself, be your own motivator. Got it. That makes sense. Learning how to manage your focus. I think that's brilliant. We don't hear people talk about it that much. What's three, four, and five?
So I'll bring it back to a quote. It's a lyric in a song, right? Okay. And it's a Jay-Z quote. And the lyric is, I will not lose even in defeat. There's a valuable lesson learned, so it evens it up for me. And I think that to me is hugely, that's one of the mantras I follow, because it's one of the one things we all share as humans, and it's failure. You know, failure is part of human character, and it's the one thing we all share. And it's what happens when you fail, how you choose to look at it. You know, failure is simply an opportunity to look for a solution or to find success in something. Because if you're winning all the time, you're not learning a whole lot. So that would be a huge thing for me. I mean, look, progress is progress. And, you know, it's only a loss if you stop. And that's the way I look at it. The fourth thing would be just to make sure that you're surrounding yourself with the right people. And I'm not talking about, you know, who hangs out with you on a daily basis. I think that who are the people closest to you that make the biggest impact on your life? And you want to fulfill your circle with people who are encouraging, who are knowledgeable, who give you the advice and will call you out when you're wrong. You know, because ultimately, if you surround yourself with a bunch of yes people, that's never going to end well for you, because you're going to believe your own hype. One of the last things I think out of the five would be, and I always refer to this as controlling the fire. So fire has the ability to do two things. And, you know, this kind of aligns with fear and anxiety, which every single business owner or person on this planet faces. Fire has the ability to do two things. It can stop you in your tracks and paralyze you, and you can just simply look around and watch everything around you burn down. Or you can control it to keep you warm. And if you're able to learn how to control that fire, you're able to realize levels of success that you probably didn't know you were capable of. But that's all about nurturing who you are as a person, accepting who you are, and taking a long, hard look at yourself to make sure that you're having those honest conversations frequently.
So I love this a lot. I think that one of the biggest parts of this conversation has been around those five. So congratulations. I like them a lot. Tell me a little bit more about controlling the fire so that I and the listeners can understand that. I think many different things about fires. I could say that these are external things. This is COVID. This is a financial issue with a vendor, or it's my own perceptions of self, my doubt, my fear. What's the fire analogy for?
I think it's the analogy is around fear and anxiety. If you think, what is it, like 200, over 200 million people on the planet suffer from anxiety. And if I'm not mistaken, the statistic is 40 million of those alone live in the USA. So, I mean, that's a lot of people every day walking around lost with no real direction and fearful to make a move in case they get it wrong. You know, So the analogy for fire is fear and anxiety. And if you can learn that, I think that's an absolute superpower because we all experience it. And I do think it's one of the key things that stops a person from doing or not doing.
So question, how did you come up with these five? Was this just a long walk and have you been developing this over time? What was your process?
Yes. Yeah. So it wasn't even a process. To be honest, there was a time when I really didn't even think that far ahead. I just made so many mistakes that I was able to really truly look back on those when I was much more open-minded. I was able to look back on all these mistakes that were made. And I realized if I would have done certain things differently, I would have had different results. It took me longer than it should have to change my circle, more importantly. And then when I saw the way people who were operating on a much higher level of success than say we are, were operating, just changed everything in the way I view everything, because the world is not that singular. It's not that granular. There's a lot of different ways to get results. And, you know, once you realize that the first way you tried it doesn't work, you know, that there's 100 other ways to give it a shot. So look, these were principles that I kind of developed over time. That they didn't happen in a year. They didn't happen in two. This has happened over the last decade.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. And you're the product of your product. You come to them because you needed to.
Yeah.
You've come to them because you've experienced failure. You've experienced maybe not believing in yourself. I'm putting words in your mouth. You know?
No, you're not. You're not. I mean, look, that's still, to be honest, it still gets me sometimes to this day. You know, I don't want to use the cliche term imposter syndrome, but sometimes, you get a little vulnerable and you're like, oh man, when, especially when you're faced with a situation that you might not have experienced before, or you're having a little difficulty processing. You're like, I know I should be able to figure this out, but right now I can't. So my first go-to, I step back and I just let it sit and I watch it because sometimes you just need to take some space to let it process. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I'd love to be the type of person that could get quick information, small bits of information, and make real good decisions all the time. That would be amazing.
Right.
That's not reality. You know, you can get better decisions, but you're not going to be that quick all the time.
It's funny you mentioned I have a past tendency. It's still a tendency of mine that when I run into anxiety around something, what my natural default is get into action, to do something about it. Call the person, make the decision, write the check, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's made it worse, you know, because I pounced on it out of my need to resolve it as fast as possible because it made me feel better.
Exactly.
Which isn't to say that it helped the situation. So I've been sort of, you know, I resonate with what you said. I've been getting better at, all right, let's not send that email yet. Let's not make that phone call. Let's sleep on it. Let's go for a walk. Let's get a couple other people to help me off the ledge and also process this. You know, it's good advice. I totally understand what you're saying on that one. To try to transition into like maybe the last piece of this, what's the why? If you think about Simon Sinek's why work, right? What's the why around your business, which can also sort of translate or transfer us into how people can sort of follow what you're doing and connect with you? So first, what's the why? Why are you doing what you're doing, man? And then how can we connect with you?
Sure. So the why, it started with my mother. My mother was a master hair technician. She worked in hair replacement studios for many years. And she owned hair replacement studios with my father. And in the early 90s, she got chemical poisoning from the product she was using. And it forced my dad to sell the businesses and go into focusing on the development of a safe and effective line for technicians, for hair wearers, because it's hair replacement we were predominantly focused on for many years. So that's our why. My mother's okay. She did have to retire early. She never went back to work. But the toll that those products took on her because of the dangerous chemicals in them destroyed her. So that is our why. That's why we do what we do, because we know
safety.
It's the safety. Yeah. And that you talked earlier about, you know, putting the money and everything aside. Money for us is just a byproduct of the mission we have, which is to, which we've done, revolutionize the hair replacement industry to give them safe, effective products. And now we're trying to, you know, bring that same methodologies and principles to a wider range of the cosmetic industry.
Ryan, wonderful. And Ryan, how can we connect with you if we would like to?
Yeah, so we're, from a company perspective, we're on all major social media channels, TikTok, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. My main hangout is in LinkedIn. So, you know, look, if anyone wants to connect, I'm more than happy to connect at any point. And then our website is prohairlabs.com. So there's multiple touch points there.
Ryan, I really enjoyed this. I really have. I wasn't sure, you know, you never know when you walk into these things, you know. And but you've been a delightful guy to get to know. And thanks for staying up until 12:38 tomorrow morning to have this conversation. It's time to go to bed, man.
Yeah, no, look, I got a little bit more to do, but I'm getting there. You know, I'm getting there.
That's great. Well, thanks for your time, my friend.
No, I appreciate it, Dean. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thanks for having me.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.